Well, I've spoken in this room many times, but never as part of a service. I don't think I've ever been in this. Once I was in the space of a sermon in a church, and that was at a gay church in Halifax. So I'll do my best, because I'm quite moved by you inviting me to speak about Bolivia, because since I was there in 2006, Bolivia has been an inspiration to me. And so that you've chosen to share that inspiration means a lot to me. So I'm going to start by reading something, because I think that the Bolivian notion of living well is very important to the world right now. And it's being adopted throughout Latin America and transforming, I think, in the process, transforming the left in Latin America to have a different vision of what change means. And that's a vision that combines spirituality and politics. And so I think that's something, obviously, that you've been in the lead in doing here in Canada, and something that's very important that I learned over the last couple of years, something I probably totally rejected in the past. So I want to read you. When I was in Bolivia, I heard this idea of living well, and I asked, what did it mean? And I was told it means that the value that's deeply rooted in the people and the indigenous people there is that I can't be happy unless everyone in my community has what they need, which is kind of the opposite of our society, where I can't be happy unless I have more than everybody else. Living well means living within a community, a brotherhood, a sisterhood, and particularly completing each other without exploiters or exploited, without people being excluded or people who exclude, without people being segregated or people who segregate. Within the framework of living well, what matters the most is not the individual. What matters the most is the community, where all families live together. We form part of the community as the leaf forms part of the plant. Nobody says, I will just take care of myself. I don't care about the community. It is as absurd as if the leaf said to the plant, I do not care about you. I will only take care of myself. We are all valuable, and we all have a space, duties, and responsibilities. We all need everybody else. Based on complementing each other, the common wealth, organized mutual support, the community, and the community life developability without destroying mankind, or I would say humanity. Consequently, living well is contrary to capitalist development and goes beyond socialism. For capitalism, what matters most is money, making a profit. For socialism, what matters most is the man, because socialism tries to meet the increasingly growing needs of man, both material and spiritual. Within the living well framework, what matters the most is neither man nor money. What matters the most is life. But capitalism does not care about life. And the two development models, the capitalist and the socialist, need rapid economic growth, causing a dissipation of energy and an insatiable use of fossil fuels to fuel growth. And the indigenous people, as you no doubt know, understand that humans are not put on earth to exploit nature, but rather to protect it, and that we're part of nature. And that, which is a very powerful spiritual underpinning of all indigenous knowledge, everywhere I've been anyway, everything I know about, is absolutely central to solving the crises that we face, the economic, social, political, spiritual crises, environmental crises that we face. Well, so that's the philosophy of living well. But how have they put it into practice? And this is the part that I think is the most inspiring. Because one of the things that's happened, and that, you know, we're not very aware of here in Canada, we should be more aware of, is that over the last 20 years, the indigenous movements all around the world have come into the forefront. We have some notion of that because of the Declaration on Indigenous Rights that the UN just adopted, which Canada refused to sign. And the fact is, it took 20 years to get the UN to adopt it. And the reason that it's adopted, and it's a very powerful document, I strongly suggest that you read it, And it's all about collective rights. It's all about community, as the Bolivians would say. And it's a real framework for a relationship between indigenous people and non-indigenous people. But more than that, it's a framework for living, as living well is. And so what the Bolivians have done, my view, and I've always considered myself a socialist, and certainly, but I never was satisfied with the way in which socialism was defined over the years. And so what the Bolivians have done is bring the wisdom of Andean knowledge, Andean is the people that they come from, together with into the modern world, and they're interpreting it for the modern world, combined with some of the better ideas of socialism, if you want, about socially shared resources, in my view, and democracy. And so Evo Morales, everybody calls him Evo in Bolivia, he says, we had to wait 180 years for the refoundation of our country. 580 years, sorry. We are standing before a state that has died, and we watch while another is born. Gone forever is the colonial state, which was permissive to the continuous looting of our natural resources, and gone too is the discriminatory colonial state. And then he signed a decree declaring January 2nd the Plurinational State Foundation Day and declaring it to be a national holiday. Because what the Bolivians have done is found the first real post-colonial state, non-colonial state, because they have a vision that the liberation, the so-called liberation of South America by Bolivar, liberated the white people in South America, but didn't liberate the indigenous people who remained marginal. And so Latin America continued to be a colonialized state, just as Canada does in the United States. And if anyone doubts that, just read the Indian Act. Indigenous people here still live in a colonial framework. But in Latin America, it's even worse in terms of the restriction that created on the development of those countries. And Bolivia is the first state in the Americas that has refounded itself and thought through what does it mean to have a non-colonial state. And basically what it means is that all peoples who live in Bolivia are equal. So 34 in different indigenous groups, even though Evo comes from the Aymara, which is the Aymara and the Quechua are the majority indigenous groups. They have no benefit over the other indigenous groups. And the Afro-Bolivians who live in the north of Bolivia also have equal rights, as do the European Bolivians. Every group is equal and can participate equally in society. Also, women. In the last election, this is, it's interesting, the scripture that was just read, and that the people who speak the truth are driven out of their hometown. Well, in the case of Bolivia, our modern version is, we never hear about it. It never gets written. It's extraordinary what's happening. Like if you just look at it, that Bolivia is 70% indigenous people who have been marginalized, persecuted, exploited, mercilessly exploited. It was the second poorest country next to Haiti in the Americas. And the indigenous people took power. That was in December 2005 or January 2006. And, we heard maybe a little line about that. And then what happened was, and I'll tell you in a minute what they've achieved already, is a battle to achieve change, to achieve change where wealth would be shared, to achieve change where the exploitation of their resources would stop. So, for example, when I was there in July 2006, which was 6 months after they took office, they announced to the multinational corporations that owned all the gas and oil in Bolivia, and Bolivia has the biggest gas deposits in Latin America. They said, you've been taking 80% of your profits out of the country all these years, stolen from our people. So we're going to make you an offer, which is, we'll take 80%, and you can take the 20%. And we'll give you 6 months to think about it, and if you don't want to do it, you can leave. And then we'll take 100%. It was very clever. I thought it was very clever because, of course, the problem, if they nationalized everything, was they wouldn't have the people to run it, which is often a problem, right? But I thought, there's no way these multinational corporations can accept this. But you know what? Every one of them signed the deal because 20% was better than nothing. And that 80% was not used to enrich the leaders of Bolivia or the elites of Bolivia. It was used, and I'll just tell you some of the things that they did. They increased the minimum wage. They eliminated illiteracy. They eliminated extreme poverty by 6%. They had a pension for seniors for the first time. They they gave, when I was in Bolivia, let me tell this story, we were driving from Cochabamba to La Paz, Bolivia, very mountainous country, and we were at the highest point, 4,000 meters, and we stopped, you know, to sort of take a picture at the highest point in Bolivia. And these three indigenous children came down to greet us, and they were beautiful. One was eight, the boy was eight, and the children were, his sisters were maybe 5 and 3. And I wanted to take a picture, of course. And he said, no photo. And my friend, my Spanish isn't that good. I understand, but I don't speak. And my friend, an interpreter, Susan Harvey, who was with me, she said, you want money? Figuring that that's why. And he said, no, no photo. So she asked him, what do you want? And he said, a notebook. He wanted a notebook so he could go to school, because he didn't have the money for a notebook, and so he couldn't go to school. And when we told that story, and we met cabinet ministers and union leaders and mayors in Bolivia, they all started to cry, because Evo was now the prime minister, the president. This little indigenous boy felt now he could go to school. He could be whatever he wanted to be. So in that sense, Evo's election was like Obama's election. Making the indigenous young people believe that they could do anything, that they could be whoever they wanted to be. And one of his first acts is to have scholarships for all children so that they can buy notebooks and pens and go to school. And so there's been a big increase in attendance at school. They've hired 3,000 teachers. And I could go on and on. They created a whole cooperative movement where they're giving microloans. Through assistance from Brazil and Venezuela, they've eliminated all their debts to the IMF or to the U.S. so that they have complete freedom to carry out the development of the country in the way that they think best, rather than. And even the IMF has praised them for not using the so-called windfall from the profits from oil companies in a corrupt way. And now this was not accomplished, as you might imagine, without a struggle. There was a very privileged elite in Latin America, as there is in most South American countries, and they fought. They fought very hard, including with violence. And when Evo got elected, the day of that I was there, one day I was there was the establishment of the Constituent Assembly when they refounded Bolivia, and when Evo stood there with the head of the army, the chief top general, and he said, the Bolivian army will never again be used against the Bolivian people. Because in past, one of the reasons they won the election was the struggles around privatization of water, which you probably know about, against the further privatization of gas and oil, in which 35 people were killed by the army. And so he made that promise, and he kept to that promise. And despite violence from thugs, right-wing thugs, despite the murder of 17 peasants in Pando province, he never used the army against the Bolivian people. He used the rule of law and mobilization. Because Evo understands, and the MAS, that's the political party that he heads, they don't call it a political party, they call it an instrument, a political instrument of the social organizations. Because what they understand is that power doesn't come from the state. Power doesn't come to him as an individual. It comes from the people who are organized. And even before he speaks to his cabinet, let's say when he gets elected, he meets with the indigenous, peasant, and workers' organizations because he feels accountable to them. And they feel part of the state and part of the government. It's a whole new way of looking at state and government. When I interviewed him, Bolivia had not yet understood the role that it could play in the world, but I understood it. I really felt, after being there for 3 weeks, you know, and I tend to have a strong intuitive knowledge of how social movements work. And after being there for 3 weeks and listening to them and learning, and every person I talked to, I thought, I have to think about this, because it was such a profound shift in my way of thinking about how political change happened. But they didn't have an idea yet. And I asked Devo, I said, when I interviewed him, and I said, well, what do you have to say to the people of the world? And at first he looked at me like I was kind of crazy. Like, because, you know, they weren't thinking about the world then. They were thinking, like, how are they going to change this country of theirs, which was such a mess at that point. And he said, the indigenous communities have historically lived in community, in collectivity, in harmony, not only with each other as human beings, but with Mother Earth and nature. And we have to recover that. If we think about life as equality and justice, if we think of humanity, the model of the West, industrialization and neoliberalism, is destroying the planet Earth, which for me is the great Pachamama. It's heading toward destroying humanity. And from Bolivia, we can make a modest contribution to defend life, to save humanity. That's our responsibility. So you can see that his initial talking to me about it and what they've written now more recently has got a common thread. And he's done this by defying the Washington Consensus on Development. And Bolivia, by the way, their economy grew 6% this year in the middle of a world economic crisis. They have the strongest growth in the Americas. Of course, we don't hear about that either, right? So even in capitalist terms, they're succeeding. In his first term, he sent the IMF, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the U.S. ambassador packing, all for different reasons. Their idea about working with the U.S. is they want to be friends with the U.S. But when the U.S., they had evidence that the U.S. supported the violence in Pando province, they expelled the U.S. ambassador. He renationalized gas, as I said, and I said what else he did. So all of this resulted in a shift. So last time he lost election, they didn't have a majority in Senate. And I want to just give you one example of how the spiritual and the political come together. The Senate, the right wing controlled the Senate. We know something about that watching the United States, even though the right wing doesn't even control the Senate there. So there was this new constitution refounding Bolivia as a non-colonial state. It was passed by the Constituent Assembly after big battles. It was passed by a referendum of the people by 66%. It was passed by the House. They have a similar structure to the U.S. And then in the Senate stalled it. So you know what Evo did? He went on a hunger strike. He went on a hunger strike with 8 of his cabinet ministers. Can you imagine? And we didn't hear anything about this, you know. A president goes on a hunger strike. Within 5 days, 3,000 people were on a hunger strike. And the right knew that Evo said, I'm willing to die for democracy. If I have to die, I'll die for democracy. And the right knew he meant it. And so they gave up. They gave in. They gave in. And when the next election came, which was last December, he won 66%, and they got 66% in the both houses of Congress, which means that now they can really proceed with their agenda. And not only that, but in Santa Cruz, which was the center of opposition, they came very close to winning Santa Cruz. Because what's happened is that small elite has gotten, despite the fact that they own all the media, everything else, they've gotten isolated. Because Evo Morales and the MAS have changed the country in a positive direction. They've done it nonviolently. They've done it according to the principles that they said they do it on. And so the urban middle class, which is the part of the population that goes back and forth, has gone over to support Evo in this recent election. And of course, he had to, in order to stop the constitutional crisis, he agreed not to run again. So he has a 5-year term, and that's it. So The inspiration of Bolivia, and it's not only Bolivia, the indigenous people all through the Americas, I don't know as much about indigenous people in Asia but in Africa, but indigenous people all through the Americas have a prophecy for this time. I mean, whether you know, the Lakota people have it, the indigenous people in Alaska have it, the indigenous people, well, we all know about the Mayan, even though we have a distorted view of it. And the prophecy is that there will come a time when the world will be in, when humanity will be in crisis, and the very survival of humans will be at stake, and that is the time that the indigenous people will come forward, and that is happening. It's happening. Bolivia is the most clear example, but it's happening throughout Latin America, whether it's Guatemala, Panama, Colombia, in all these places, indigenous people are coming forward, and on a and here it's happening here in Canada. Some of the most brilliant young people right now, Clayton Thomas Mueller, Jessica Yee, Ben Paulus. These are people who are, they're all young, they're all indigenous, and they're just amazing. Like, they're like, you know, what we used to call Renaissance people. They can do everything. They can write, they can speak, they're nice, they're good organizers, everything. You know, they're the most brilliant young leaders that I meet. My view is not that Bolivia is a model, you know, the old sort of kinds of socialism, we saw models, like some people thought Russia was a model or China or Cuba. But Bolivia is not a model. Bolivia is, you know, a very different country than Canada, very different. But it gives us an idea of values, of a direction, of an approach, which is integrative, which combines all issues in an approach which is about life, about love, about living in community, about supporting each other, about living well, which is a rejection of consumerism, and a rejection of competition for cooperation. But the other thing that they're doing, and this is true also in Venezuela, is they're redefining the role of the state. Instead of being, you know, in Canada we have this debate, left-right debate, is about a big state or a small state, a big government or a small government. Well, they're redefining the role of the state. They're not saying their state should be bigger. They're saying the role of the state should be to support the community. To support the community either through resources, through knowledge, through skills, through money, whatever is needed. But decisions should be made at a community level. And the role of the state should be to support that, not to go from top down and tell people what to do. So it's a different notion of what the state is as well, which is emerging. And all of this is emerging. It's all emerging. The values are clear, but what it means in today's world, not so clear. Not always so clear. So, you know, in my book, Transforming Power, it's very difficult for me because to write this book because, you know, I grew up as a woman in a man's world, and the way that I got ahead was always to be absolutely sure of what I thought about everything. Any of you that saw me when I was on Face Off would know that, which was a debate show, or had to debate right-wingers every night of the week. I could never say, gee, I have to think about that. I don't know what I think. Not possible, you know? So the idea of actually, and this is again is an indigenous idea of asking questions rather than having all the answers, that the questions are more important than the answers, is something that I really have to struggle. I'm still struggling with. When I finished the book, I thought, I can't really publish this book because it was so different than what I'm used to writing. But I felt and I feel that what I learned through my travels, because I had the privilege to be able to travel and spend time there, I needed to share that and my own confusion, uncertainty, and the inspiration that I felt. So I would just want to say that I'm very moved that you invited me to talk about this, because usually people invite me to talk about something else and I talk about it anyway because I think it's what's important and it's what inspires me. And I know that, so I'll end by saying what the four policy pillars are, the political side. And, oh, the other thing is that the day before Evo was inaugurated as the formal inauguration, it's what the indigenous people call the real inauguration, the day before, which they do at a sacred site. that was a center of Andean, of the original Andean society, one of the few sites that's left. And they, and the Aymara and the elders from all the indigenous communities in Bolivia, all the indigenous, the First Nations, or the original people, they call them, inaugurated Evo as the spiritual leader of the Bolivian indigenous people. And so he is both at the same time a spiritual leader and a political leader, but not in the sense of a dominating spiritual leader, but only a recognition of the history of the indigenous people, that he represents the importance of his coming to power, and not only coming to power, but implementing the changes in a way that's consequent with indigenous spirituality and values, which I think, myself, is one of the most powerful things that's ever happened in my lifetime, to see that happen. Given the level to which the injustice with which we live is based on colonialism and slavery, based on the, in the Americas, based on the oppression, exploitation, and slaughter of indigenous people, that it's now an indigenous people who are rising up to show us the way forward, to redefine what progressive politics are, is something so profound and important that I don't even have the words to express it. And when I saw in Copenhagen that when the reclaim, whatever, can't ever remember what it was, reclaim the conference, when the people's organizations marched to the conference center and the doors were closed on them, it was the Bolivian delegates that led the march out to join them. And it was the Canadian indigenous people who spoke with the movements and said, the Bolivian people, they need to be in the front of this march. And indeed they were. And now Evo has called for a summit of social movements on the environment, on Earth Day, what he calls Mother Earth Day, which is in April. And that will be Bolivia leading the social movements, who I think are the real hope for profound changes in the environment, building for Mexico in December 2010. So thank you for inviting me, and I hope I gave a good substitute for a sermon. And thanks.